I'm sorry, I have a profound hearing loss in my left ear, and there's a little bit of volume that comes through, but what it does is distorted in a marble room like this. It's very hard, so please bear with me. Thank you. I simply want to address the district court's decision. It was an oral decision from the bench, which made it a little confusing and difficult to understand exactly what the grounds were on the cross motions for summary judgment. But let me address what I understood and what has been briefed as the primary arguments. The first issue was that the district court ruled that the evidence about Mr. Howie and what happened to him at the jail upon his release was not admissible. His basis for doing that was the settlement agreement that Mr. Howie entered into with a prior defendant, and this is in a prior case. There is no confidential provision in that settlement agreement. There is no prohibition whatsoever on Mr. Howie speaking about what happened to him or even the terms of his agreement. So there's nothing in the original settlement agreement for Mr. Howie that prevented him from speaking or testifying in any subsequent proceeding. His evidence is extremely germane to that of Mr. Peterson and established a clear pattern of policy failures under Monell.
So,
don't you find the facts of Howie somewhat different from your case?
Excuse me.
Don't you find the facts of Howie somewhat different from your case?
They are even more egregious. Both are egregious.
Quite but a
the
more
Howie
egregious.
Case was remarkably egregious and callous.
But then why is it relevant under Monell to warn the municipal authorities?
Well, it's relevant for two reasons. Number one, it establishes that there's been a policy failure. There's been a policy omissions and
what was the policy failure in Howie, and what was the policy failure in your case?
Thank you. I understand your question now. They're both the same policy failure. The policy failures are, get my glasses, getting old. The policy failures were, there was no written policy for checking on inmates at the time of their release for their medical condition. In other words, there's nothing that the Nevada County Sheriff's Office did.
Didn't they have a checklist?
They had a document. It was actually appeared on a computer screen, like a 3x5 card, and had a little box that said medical. And this is where the case becomes very odd. The jail officer, who I took the deposition of, testified that when they saw that screen, they would call the head of the WellPath medical in-house medical provider and ask them if the inmate was fit for medical release. And they asked the officer, what was your understanding? Was that mental health, really physical fitness, or was it physical fitness? What was it? And he said it was physical fitness. I then took the deposition of the HSA, the head of the WellPath staff there at the hospital, saying, when you got a phone call from the jail officer and booking about the inmate release, what were they asking you about when they asked you about whether or not the inmate was medically fit for release? And they said it had nothing to do with physical health of the inmate. It only had to do with whether or not the inmate was on a 5150 hold. Two opposite ends of the spectrum. In addition, I took the depositions of multiple nurses that work for WellPath. And this is where the case gets even more interesting and more egregious. All of the WellPath nurses I took the deposition of basically said, if the jail booking officer called up and said an inmate's being released, that was it. It didn't matter what physical condition the inmate was in. They were getting released, period.
But, I mean, I guess I don't understand legally what to do with the implication of your argument. I mean, here, the inmate was released because the district attorney decided not to press charges. So there's no reason to hold this person in custody. And so the implication of your argument is, nonetheless, we're going to keep the person in jail if they've got a medical situation happening?
No, not at all. If you read through their brief, we make it very clear what the policy failures were. Nevada County needs to follow certain very simple, minimal procedures to make sure that the inmate, upon release, is physically fit to walk out the door. And in the case of Mr. Howie, he was crippled and with a fractured knee. They rolled him out in a wheelchair and made him crawl out onto the curb. Mr. Peterson was limping badly, had severe bacterial infection, cellulitis. He was in terrible pain, fever, redness. He couldn't really walk. And they did nothing to check his physical health. They just let him out the back door. He had bacteremia at the time he was released. He stumbled about a mile to a gas station and collapsed and was taken to Nevada County Memorial Hospital, where he was immediately diagnosed with bacteremia and sepsis. His physically walking from the back of the jail to that gas station put his life in serious jeopardy.
Let me ask you this. If your case were to go to trial,
yes,
on the Monell theory,
yes,
what would be your theory that you would advance to the district court?
Well, we advance the theories that there's a Monell violation by omission, a failure to have appropriate policies, practices, and procedures.
And what policies and procedures should the county have had?
I list them in my brief. Let me list them to you here. Number one, there was an inappropriate policy for checking on the medical fitness of an inmate at the time of release. That little 3x5 card that appeared on the screen just said a box medical clearly was inadequate because...
So that was an affirmative policy?
Of sorts, but it was inadequate. There was an omission because it doesn't ask whether or not the inmate may need a wheelchair or crutches. They have any ambulatory problems. Do they have discharge instructions? Has the WellPath Medical given them discharge instructions where they're to go immediately to a hospital or they're to be transported at home and have bed rest? There's no discharge instructions given, and they don't check on that. They don't check and see whether or not the inmate is having their medical care transferred to another qualified medical provider. It is a malpractice for a medical provider to not transfer medical care to another medical provider when there's a serious medical condition. WellPath had the obligation to transfer that care, and the Nevada County Sheriff's has the obligation to make sure that whatever paperwork or transfers are required by medical are...
Aren't those arguments that you would make against WellPath? And WellPath isn't in this case because they filed for bankruptcy.
It's against WellPath and it's against the Sheriff's Office. The Sheriff's Office needs to see what is the status of this inmate when they're brought to the booking counter to be released. And they don't do anything.
Does your claim also, you're not asserting a failure to train claim?
Well, there is a failure to train claim because...
I'm sorry?
There is a failure to train in the sense that there is no coordination between WellPath policies and what the Nevada County Sheriff had. In other words, they don't have any training sessions where the two of them sit down together as teams and say, okay, when an inmate's released, here's what we're going to do and not do, and here's how to handle someone who has a serious infection or has an ambulatory problem. There's no coordination, there's no training. And clearly there was no training or supervision because the jail booking officer says, I just have to call up and see if he's physically fit. If they say yes, out the door the inmate goes. WellPath says, no, that checkbox has nothing to do with physical fitness. That's for a 5150 hold. And then the nurses for WellPath kept saying it didn't matter what the situation was. They got released out the door, period, whenever they got the call to release an inmate. With regard to an inmate with a medical condition who doesn't want to be transferred to another medical provider or doesn't want any ambulatory care, they can just sign a waiver. Sheriff and the WellPath provider are off the hook. But you need to ask someone who's been ill and known to be ill and having a serious medical problem before they leave that jail, do they have your discharge instructions? Do you have transport home? Do you need transport to medical facility? These are simple, basic things. It takes about 1 minute, 2 minutes to go through the paperwork and ask the questions. Instead, Mr. Peterson, who is in the medical rocket, and it's noted, limping badly, has walked a couple hundred feet from his cell to booking. Can't miss a limping. He's walked through the booking office, which I've been in many times. You can't miss someone coming from the cells to booking if they're limping badly. He gets his clothing things back. He's got to go into a room and change. He has to come back.
Let me ask you.
You cannot miss his physical condition.
Judge Forrest asked you about the other case. What was it called?
Howie.
The Howie case.
Yes.
Do you need to prove your claim that there is a failure of policy? Do you need the Howie evidence to prove that claim, or do you only need it for failure to train, to show a pattern?
Again, I think the case is important because it establishes the jury the fact that there were no policies in the beginning of 2018 when the Howey incident occurred, and they made no changes or took no corrective action. And by September 2018, when the Peterson incident occurred, nothing had happened, nothing, no difference. Yes, it is possible under the single instance rule, which I cite in my brief, to simply have a single instance as the basis for a Monell claim. But I think this case argues strongly that the Howey evidence comes in because it shows the pattern and practice. It shows the mindset. The mindset of these people was it didn't matter what physical condition these inmates were in. The release moment, release time came on that day, out they went.
So, I mean, I understand the logic of your argument, and even the, you know, these are very difficult stories to hear about what happened with these inmates, both in Howey and in this case. The problem is the legal standard that you have to work with is deliberate indifference. So much of what you've been describing might very well rise to medical malpractice, but deliberate indifference is something more than that. So in the Howey case, where the allegations were that jail staff basically beat the guy up and broke his leg and then dumped him on the curb, that seems like more than medical malpractice. That seems like, you know, something intentional. Whereas here, the guy gets released because no charges are filed against him, and he goes to the desk to be processed out of the jail, and he doesn't say, my leg is really hurting and I can't walk and please help me. He doesn't say anything at all. He takes his discharge and he walks out the jail. And so in that context, maybe they could have followed up and asked more questions, but why isn't that medical malpractice, if anything, and not deliberate indifference?
Well, it's deliberate indifference because let's take a look at the Russell case. Let me get to that. The district court did not like the Russell decision. I don't know why, because it incorporated the Gordon decision, which is what the district court was very fond of. They had the same holdings. The Russell decision is later, a decision by this court. And the Russell court has a couple of very important quotes. A plaintiff does not have to prove a complete failure to provide medical assistance to demonstrate the care was unconstitutional. Rather, a plaintiff needs to prove deliberate indifference by showing that there was a failure to provide medical treatment with the speed and medical competence required by the particular medical condition. Here the situation is Mr. Peterson cannot get medical care. As soon as the jail officers say you're released, WellPath terminates his services, and there's the jailer has an obligation to make sure that if continuing medical care, which is urgently needed for Mr. Peterson, is required, then it gets transferred.
What knowledge did the jailer have that Peterson needed medical care when Peterson wanted to exit the jail? What knowledge did he have?
Pardon me, can you repeat? I couldn't hear it.
What knowledge did the jailer have when he allowed Peterson to walk out the door that Peterson needed medical care?
It was very clear that he was limping. The officer said he didn't.
That's not what the jailer said.
I know, but my client said just the opposite. We have a factual determination for a jury. This is the most classic factual question for Jeremy I've ever seen. We have this party saying, no, they had to see me. I was limping like this, and I have to walk hundreds of feet. It's all on video as the booking officer watches, and he walks around to and from the desk, and he tries to get out the big, heavy door, and the jailer says, nah, I didn't see anything. That's his question for a jury.
Let me ask you. So a minute ago, you said that the district court seemed to like Gordon.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Does Gordon, how much does Gordon play in this case?
What? I think it's important, more for the medical WellPath side, but you do have to show deliberate indifference when you have a Monell claim by omission.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have a deliberate difference to meet here.
But didn't Gordon deal with an individual?
Yes, it was not a Monell claim.
It wasn't a Monell claim.
I don't believe it was a Monell case. That's my memory.
Right, it wasn't.
And Russell, however, was a more recent decision that incorporated Gordon, spoke about it, went through its holding, adopted it, and then expounded upon what is the standard for deliberate difference. It's not a... It's Russell really helps clarify what is or is not a medical, pure medical practice, malpractice issue versus what's deliberate indifference. Here, the jail knows that inmates become seriously ill at times. It knows that. It has hundreds of inmates every year. Some of them get very sick. It needs to have policies and practices to make sure that when an inmate is being released and they know they've been in, the jail knows Mr. Peterson was seriously ill because they keep walking him to and from the medical office for 2 days. They escort him each time from his cell to medical and back. They know he's limping. They know he's in pain.
Counsel, you've gone over time. I think we understand your argument. I'll give you a brief amount of time for rebuttal.
I'm done, Your Honor. Any further questions? I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Matt Gross, and I represent the appellee, the County of Nevada. The essence of appellant's case boils down to correctional officers at the Wayne Brown Correctional Facility, the Nevada County Jail, should have noticed that because Mr. Peterson was limping, there was an underlying serious bacterial infection, and that his medical condition required necessitating additional questions at his release and providing additional care, including transportation to a local hospital or holding him over longer. The excerpts of records show that appellant's claim fails for seven important facts.
Now, Mr. Peterson's out of the case, right?
Mr. Peterson?
Yeah.
But he's the appellant?
No, but let me ask you, the only claim here that I understand is a Monell claim.
Correct. A Monell and a conspiracy claim.
Right, but it really, we're only talking about a Monell claim.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So let me ask you this. How does Gordon and the way in which you evaluate an individual claim of medical indifference relate to this claim, the Monell claim?
One of the elements to show a Monell claim is that there has to be an underlying constitutional violation. And I think this is where Gordon comes into play a little bit, is showing that we need to show an underlying, was there deliberate indifference to medical care by the county or by any of its unnamed correctional officers here. And there's no evidence to show that there was that underlying deliberate indifference to medical care. At best, it's maybe a negligence or medical malpractice claim against WellPath. It's certainly not a deliberate indifference of medical care or showing a Monell claim for the county. Mr. Peterson, as the court noted, doesn't request any help as he's being discharged and released from the jail. He doesn't request any medical assistance. He doesn't request transportation to another hospital or jail facility or additional medical care, in essence. He doesn't request ambulatory devices such as crutches or a wheelchair to assist with the release. It's also noted correctional officers don't have access to Mr. Peterson's medical records. Under HIPAA, they have to rely on the medical staff, and so that's where the county has a process of, as my counsel noted, there's a hard card that the county does when it's releasing an inmate. And one of those boxes beyond, let's make sure we return property to the inmate, let's make sure that they have all of their belongings, is a medical check to make sure that they're medically cleared to be released from the facility, because correctional side doesn't have access to those records. And so that involves calling someone from medical to see, all right, is this person medically clear? But it's also noted in the record, correctional officers have the ability to, if they notice something in front of them that's apparent, an inmate has a serious injury, they're bleeding, they have something that a nurse or other medical provider couldn't see on the phone, they can then say, all right, can we have more evaluation? None of that happened in this case.
I just want to understand how you evaluate his, or how you look at plaintiff's theory, the case, which is that, so what we have in front of us only is a Monell, well, I understand, put aside that conspiracy claim, but we have a Monell claim that the county had a policy, maybe practice, of not providing or of not making, not determining whether or not somebody was capable of being released from the jail because of medical conditions. And that policy was the cause or resulted in the constitutional violation. Is that the way you understand plaintiff's theory?
Yes, and so one of those things in looking at the Monell claim of is there a custom practice or policy is we look at are there other cases that are showing this is either a written policy that's happening of proverbially patient dumping out of the jail, or is this the unspoken custom that is occurring in the jail? Mm-hmm. And the only evidence, as the court noted, is the Howie case, which is substantially different than our case here. Mr. Howie alleged that he was assaulted by correctional officers, that he requested medical attention that was denied. In fact, that he was so significantly injured, he was wheeled out of the jail in a wheelchair, dumped onto the curb, and then had to crawl into a cab where the cab driver noticed, your medical condition is serious, let's call the fire department. That is substantially different than Mr. Peterson here, who was able to walk on his own a mile to a nearby gas station, was able to exit the jail on his own, who never made those requests for medical help. But also importantly, Mr. Peterson was seen 9 times in the brief 48 hours he was in the jail. In the cases that I'm sure the court is aware, when we're looking at deliberate indifference, we're looking at cases where an inmate needs medical assistance and they're ignored by the jailers, they're ignored by the medical staff. Here, Mr. Peterson is seen by registered nurses, by physician's assistants, by nurse practitioners. Over 9 times, they are working up Mr. Peterson's complaints of, I have pain in my leg. Mr. Peterson testified that there was redness in his leg that was being tracked by WellPath. X-rays were ordered. There was an ordered place for an MD, a doctor, to evaluate Mr. Peterson, but that unfortunately didn't happen because the 48 hours had already arrived. And so here, WellPath is consistently treating and continuing to further Mr. Peterson's medical care.
But the officer sees him limp, according to the plaintiff, according to the video, and doesn't ask him, are you all right? Do you need a cane? Do you need some help?
I don't think that's... Mr. Peterson states that it would have been obvious to anyone that his limp, that he was limping and that that was a serious medical condition. And the other correctional officers stated, we just don't recall if he was limping or not. But
So on that state of facts, you know, why couldn't a jury believe the plaintiff's version of that, that it was obvious that I was in distress?
Because also Mr. Peterson was noted as coming in limping into the jail. And so there, the limping is not a serious enough condition or should have been something attributed to a condition or something that occurred inside the jail, because Mr. Peterson was already limping as he entered.
Regardless whether it occurred inside the jail, that's irrelevant. The question was, is his medical condition so clear that he needs some intervention by the police?
Yeah, and so looking at it, to have the Monell claim, we need to have the underlying constitutional violation. And if we use Gordon as part of our reference here, one of the first elements that the district court noted was, under Gordon, the county needs to make an intentional decision with respect to the condition under which Mr. Peterson is confined, including decisions with respect to his medical treatment. And here, there's no intentional decisions, because at best, maybe the county is subjectively aware that Mr. Peterson has a limp, but doesn't know if that's how he walks, if that's there's a bacterial infection, or just this is how Mr. Peterson is and walks and isn't a serious medical need. And so there isn't that intentional decision. And so that's one of the core facts that the district court relied on in looking at Gordon to show there's nothing that would have put the correctional officers on notice that we're aware that Mr. Peterson needs assistance, that this limping is somehow underlying it. You need to be taken to the emergency room for treatment. Unlike Howie, where Mr. Howie alleged he couldn't even physically walk.
So let's switch gears just slightly, and just for purposes of this question, assume that we think there's a question of fact on whether a constitutional violation occurred. What do we do with the argument that your friend across the aisle made in terms of there's a disconnect between the medical staff and the prison staff about what medical check even means when you're releasing somebody. Are we checking about physical condition? Are we checking about, you know, mental condition? Are you a threat to yourself or others or something? Because I assume, like, the point of even asking the question or having that checkbox on the form, maybe you can tell me, my assumption would be that the purpose of that would be to just sort of make sure that this guy is good to put on the street, both for physical and mental health reasons. But if there is a disconnect between the two people checking in on that point, then that purpose is not being served.
And I think this is where my counsel has a slight misunderstanding that there isn't a disconnect here. And so what WellPath staff, the nurses, were testifying to is we couldn't prevent the 48-hour, like, we couldn't stop Mr. Peterson from being released because we were running into Penal Code 825, 849. He needs to be released. And so what they're talking about is we couldn't prevent the physical release from his jail, but WellPath still has the ability to say if Mr. Peterson needs additional care from checking his medical chart, we can send him to the local hospital for further care. We can send him to another facility so that he's not under a state hold, but he's still receiving that medical care. And so that's where the WellPath, the medical staff, they're looking in the chart, and that's part of the determination.
Yeah, but we're in this case, we're trying to figure out whether the jail, whether the county is liable, and whether they have a policy that basically thwarts the purpose of this process of checking the well-being of a person before putting them out on the street. And most of the comments that you're making are about whether WellPath is doing a good job or not. And so I'm trying to think on the county side, like, what do we have to say that the county is, you know, knows that this is not working right and is doing and has set it up this way anyways?
Well, I think the county knows that this is working right because we see a lack of other policy, practice, or custom cases cited in here beyond Howie as being the only other one of evidence of this patient dumping that's occurring at Wayne Brown Correctional Facility. And so the county has also set up the system of the booking officer contacts the officer in charge or sergeant in the jail facility to confirm, does this inmate match on the list of someone who we can release? Then afterwards decide, all right, we need to make contact with the medical provider to also confirm that this person is safe to be released. And so that's where they have these systems in place. If the county didn't have a system like that, then maybe that might be evidence of showing, all right, there is a potential constitutional issue that's happening here. The county is purposely avoiding contacting its medical contractor to make sure inmates are safe to be put back onto the street. But that's not the case here because the county has that policy in place, has it also formally in a hard card sheet as this is done for every single inmate. And then those are reflected both in several of the county's policies, but numerous of WellPath policies as the contractor that has the more specific. I just want to briefly address that because Mr. Peterson entered the jail with a limp, failed to inform any of its jail officers of his medical condition, the jail officers were told that Mr. Peterson was cleared for release. These are not the actions of negligence or alternatively negligently being unaware of Mr. Peterson's medical condition, and certainly there's no evidence that they acted with reckless disregard. One of the elements to finding that there is a underlying Monell claim. And if the court doesn't have any other questions.
Let me ask you this. Is it always the case that in a Monell claim, such as the one we have here, that the plaintiff must prevail against the individual officers in order to establish a Monell claim, to go forward with a Monell claim? In other words, if they can't prevail against the individual officers, they can't prevail on the Monell claim?
No, because Monell is the way for a 1983 claim to be asserted against the entity.
Right.
But it still requires, in any Monell analysis, if we're looking at failure to train, ratification, custom policy or practice, we have to look at what is the underlying constitutional violation here. And the way this complaint in this case has been framed is being a deliberate indifference of medical care. That's where the briefing, the depositions and stuff have occurred here. I think as I have articulated in the briefs, there's substantial evidence to also show that there was a custom of having this release process for the jail of confirming that Mr. Peterson could be medically cleared for release. The county has its policies. Its medical provider certainly has even more detailed policies.
Okay.
Hope that answers the court's question.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Dwyer, did you want a minute for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
I think this case is a classic case that belongs in front of a jury. There are real questions of fact. My client will testify that when he went into booking to get released, the officer told him, he asked if he could make a phone call, and the officer said, make it snappy. He will testify that the officer was curt and short with him, and clearly the message was, get your rear out the door, Mr. Peterson. And that's what he'll testify about. And then with regard to the policies, it's important to note, and I think on page 54 of my brief, there's a footnote about what policies Nevada County actually has in place. It mistakenly, and I corrected the record, there were no policies and practices in place at 2018 when this occurred. They made a subsequent change in their policy directives, which are beneficial, still not enough, but they did make improvements, but that was after these events. I refer you to, I think it's a footnote, page 54. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. All right, the matter of Peterson versus Nevada County is submitted, and we thank counsel for their argument today.